It's an incredible thing. There have been so many Haggadahs published over the years. I think some historians believe that the Haggadah is the single most published Jewish sefer, certainly in terms of the number of varieties of Haggadahs, the number of Perushim, the number of versions. There's such a chavivus that Klal Yisrael have for the Haggadah and for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which the Haggadah is our guide and the Haggadah is our vehicle. And I think that the diversity of Haggadahs, the fact that Haggadah has been published so many times with so many different Perushim, I think it also speaks to the fact that Ribbono Shel'olam's mitzvah to us, V'igadta to Levincha, Ribbono Shel'olam's mitzvah to us to engage with the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim every single year. For over 3,000 years running, for well over 3,000 years running, Klal Yisrael has fulfilled the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim 3,000 different times, more, 3,400 different times. And it's a remarkable thing that every single time we tell the same story. It's not really the case. Every single time we relate to the story, but Klal Yisrael relates to the story, the same story differently, in different periods in Jewish history. And maybe that's why there are so many different Perushim to the Haggadah, because Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah to see, to relate the story. Chayv Adam Liros has asked Hu Yatza Meshiba Mitzrayim, I think cuts both ways. In every generation, Kadosh Baruch Hu expects a Jew to relive Yetzias Mitzrayim, because in turn, Yetzias Mitzrayim, a Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, will relate to every single period in Jewish history. We relate to Jews of 300 years ago and to Jews of 3,000 years ago and to Jews of last year and to Jews of this year. And I think one of the ways to help to make that happen, and one of the ways, this is certainly a remarkable period in our lives, one of the ways to make it happen this year and in any year, to make sure that the Haggadah and the Magid, that the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim can serve as an effective vehicle for ourselves and for our families, to, again, both to relate ourselves to the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim of so many thousands of years ago, and to seek to help, to ensure that the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim can be mashpia on us, and that we can figure how it relates to us in our situation, and it gives us new lenses to see our lives. I think an important aspect of helping to make that happen is in our own preparation now for to be Mekayim CPC Mitzrayim next week, to seek to find a theme or two around which we wrap a lot of our CPC Mitzrayim, around which we wrap a lot of our discussion, a lot of our questions, a lot of our focusing, Mitzvah Hashem Leila Seder next week. I know Mr. Sharon Wichter and others have spoken over the last couple of years about the importance of picking a theme. And I think some people find that there's one theme that they relate to year after year, and some people will find that, you know, different years call for different themes. So what I would like to do now, I want to, over the next couple of minutes, work through some of the highlights of Magid, and maybe share some ideas in particular paragraphs. But let me open by sharing just a theme that's been on my mind. And maybe it'll resonate with some of you as well. It's a theme that you may want to, if it resonates with you, and if you think it will resonate with some of the people around the table, to share this theme. And I think it's a theme that will run through at least some of the ideas, that specific ideas that we'll share as well the next half hour. And the theme that's on my mind is a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. We're not sure that we're going to have the Chuas Hashem Karavayim, but at this point, we don't necessarily expect to have the opportunity to read Shir Hashirim B'Tzibur in a week and a half. But this is the season very much of Shir Hashirim. And there's a pasuk, I may have mentioned to some of you in other Shirim, because this has really been on my mind the last couple of days. A pasuk at the end of Shir Hashirim, Shlomo HaMelech, Rabbi Shechter's want to present this, Shlomo HaMelech is giving us pshat in a pasuk near the end of Chumash. The pasuk near the end of the Gabbam just sent that tonight, the reminder about Kiddush Levana. So one of the psukim from Shir HaShirim that we say near the from the end of Shir HaShirim, we say near the end of Kiddush Levana, describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu watching us. Mashgiach min hachalonos meitzitz min hacharakim. He's looking out the window, and he's peeking through the cracks. The boy, the boyfriend, and the Shir HaShirim, the divine boyfriend, is watching his beloved woman, watching Klal Yisrael. What's the significance of that? And the two ways in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as watching Klal Yisrael, looking out the window, peeking between the cracks. So Rav Shechter wants to present this as an interpretation of a pasuk at the end of Chumash, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes that there'll be periods of Jewish history when he hides his face. Anochi haster astir panai mehem. There'll be times in Jewish history, there are times of haster panim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's face is hidden. And that's a frightening metaphor, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would hide his face from us. And Shlomo HaMelech is explaining that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hiding his face means that he's hiding his face, we can't see him, but he's still Metzitz Min HaCharakim. The difference between Mashgiach Min HaChalonos and Metzitz Min HaCharakim, the difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking at us from the window and peeking between the cracks, either way, Rebbe Moshe was watching us. But if someone's watching me from the window, they see me, and I can see that they see me. It's a two-way street. A two-way perception. But when someone is peeking at me through the cracks, so he's still watching, but I can't see that he's watching. I cannot perceive his supervision. I cannot perceive his care. And Hester Pana means not that Kadosh Baruch Hu hides his face, blankets his face and doesn't see us. But Hester Pana means that Kadosh Baruch Hu hides from us the fact that he's watching. He makes his care of us, his supervision of us, his involvement with us, less obvious to us. That I think, at least for me, is a significant theme any year, and maybe has particular resonance this year, the notion of the theme of divine involvement with the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement with each and every one of us, that's I think one of the major lessons of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. One of the main ideas that we're trying to relay from generation to generation by reliving this story is very much HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement with us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement with us. And we'll see as we work our way through Magid, we come ultimately Kfar Rav, it's a kavod to have you. We'll see as we work our way through Magid, that idea will be the crescendo of our Magid. That idea of divine involvement with each of us. But let's start from the beginning. And let's step back to, we open Magid with a question, with a series of questions in Manashtana. And then, as the Gemara points out, there are two answers to that Manashtana. There's the political answer and the spiritual answer. You want to know what happened tonight? So on the one hand, Avadim Hayinu L'Parbi Mitzrayim V'Yotzienu, there was a physical, political shift. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was goel us politically. Hotzianu mi'avdus l'cheres. And a couple paragraphs later, we give the other half of the answer, that political redemption was meant to get us to a spiritual goal. The goal of the political change, the goal of the physical cheres, was in order to enable the spiritual cheres, that mitchila ovid avarazar hayavaseinu v'achshav keravan amlachim lavadaso. That Kadosh Baruch, that we had been steeped in Avodah Zarah, we had been steeped in idolatry and paganism, we didn't recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift through freeing us physically, we then had the capacity 7 weeks later to be freed spiritually and to come to recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu. But in between those two halves of the answer, the Haggadah pauses to go through instructions. And so we begin to talk about Filu Kol HaChachamim, Kol HaNevonim, and Kol Marbreiz and Meshubach. Who is Chayiv? Everyone is Chayiv. How much are you Chayiv? You're Chayiv plenty. That yes, maybe I can get away with a little bit, but within the But within the framework of, you know, who my audience is, Kol Hamar Be'Reza Meshubach. It may be a ribui in terms of quantitatively how long we go. It may be a ribui qualitatively in terms of how deeply we can think about these ideas together in an age-appropriate way, how deeply we can connect. And then the Haggadah is going to continue on to more instructions after the question of who is Chayev and how much are we Chayev. We're going to move on to talk about, relating to different people, the Arabanim. We're going to talk about when the mitzvah applies specifically, B'shar Sheish Matzah, Mar Menachem Fanecha. But before we move on, we tell a story. The story that's familiar to all of us, of course, the Maisa B'chamisha Zakenim, Maisa B'lezer B'shur, B'lezer B'nazari, B'kiva of Tarfon, and so on and so forth, B'suvim B'vnei Brak, they have a Seder all night long. So why is the story here? Why is the story here? So Pasha Pshat, the story is here to highlight and to prove, as it were, the 2 points, the two instructions that we just gave. Who's Chayiv? Everyone. How much you Chayiv? Kol Marbar is in Meshubach. And we tell you, in case you don't believe me, look at this. Five of the greatest Tanam of all time, they were also busy with Sipritzi as Yisrael. And not just for a little bit, all night long. Okay. So proof, Masarav, that Afilu Kol Hanu Chachamim, and Masarav, the Kol Marbar is in Meshubach. And that's certainly true. And there's also more. There's also more. And then there's another story, by the way, later on. We mentioned about Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Hareini kiven shivim shana. Right? Lo zachisi. What's that all? What's that all about? I need to hear that Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was involved in Sipur Tzias Mitzrayim. But Ben Zoma is the one who drove it home. What's the significance? So step by step. So in terms of the story, one of the details that jumps out at us, look at that story, they're Masum B'Vnei Brak. They were all in B'nai Brak. This year we're all staying home for Pesach. But even in a more typical year, some people stay home, some people go away. Rabbis always stay home for Pesach. This is remarkable. Five rabbis are all away for Pesach. What's it all about? How they all get together. The Gemara tells the Sanhedrin. They're each Rabbanim. Each one is a Rav in a different town. So they came across two ideas, I think both interesting, in terms of the significance of the location. They're all together in B'nai Brak. So Zilberstein quotes from the B'nai Yisassar, which is not common, I think, they quote Chassidus Shasharim. So the B'nai Yisassar wonders why we highlight the B'nai Brak. The B'nai Yisassar suggests that the Gemara, there's another comment the Gemara makes about B'nai Brak. The B'nai Banav Shal Haman Lamdu Torah B'nai Brak. That Haman had great-grandchildren who not only were not as evil as their great-grandfather, and not only converted to Yadus, but they became Talmid Chachamim. Lamdu Torah B'Vnei Brak. B'Banav Shal Haman Lamdu Torah B'Vnei Brak. So the B'nei Yisrael says, the Gemara, they go back to Sefer Shoftim, B'Nei Brak was in the area of Dan. B'nai Brak was in an area that had been associated with Avodah Zarah, even Jewish Avodah Zarah, Pesal Micha. B'nai Brak had been an area that had been a very negative area for Klal Yisrael, an area that had been the source of a lot of spiritual negativity. And yet, the Gemara tells us, B'nai Brak Shal Haman, Lam Dutor B'nai Brak. You could be coming with terrible yichus. The people are descended from Haman. The location has the stain of the history of Pesal Micha, of Jewish Avodah Zarah, and yet that could be converted into a place of Torah. Change is always possible. And he says maybe that's why the Haggadah highlights that they got together. This great Seder happened specifically in B'nai Brak. to highlight that idea that in the midst, you know, that you may feel the cards are all stacked against you, and yet you can come to great geula, and you can come to great levels. Rav Zilberstein goes on to quote a couple of pages later that Rabbi Yashiv had a similar take about the next paragraph. So what's the significance of this? There are different ways to read this paragraph. Rabbi Yashiv gives the following suggestion. Who was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Who was that man? Who was that man? So we heard about him in the previous story. He was a contemporary of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva. As a matter of fact, remember the story the Gemara tells in Brachas of the impeachment of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel had been the leader, had been the Nasi post-Churban in Yavne, and he had a strong leadership style, which he felt under the circumstances was appropriate. Some of the Tanam felt that his leadership style was too strong, and ultimately, after a series of episodes, they impeach him. There's a lot to say about the story. I don't have time to go into that story in depth. There's remarkable mitos on all sides. Rabbi Gamliel comes back to yeshiva the next day, even though he was fired from his position, but he's still a member of the yeshiva. He's back the next day involved in learning with Rabbi Yoshua. And meanwhile, the other Tanaim who removed him were very careful not to replace him with the number two man, Rabbi Yoshua, who had been his antagonist, because they didn't want to make it seem like it was a personal vendetta. And then whom do they pick? The next likely person to replace Rabbi Gamliel is Rabbi Akiva. But they say, no, they want someone with a zechus avos. So they pick Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was Dor Asiri LeEzra. Gemara says he was a 10th generation descendant of Ezra Sofer. The Gemara tells us also, elsewhere, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a man of extraordinary wealth. So Yashiv says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare ani, look at me. He has it all. He has money. He has yichus. He became the Nasi. And how do you become the Nasi? But the Gemara says that when he was appointed as a Nasi, his wife said to him, I don't think it's a good idea. You're too young. They're not going to respect you. An 18-year-old, a young man. And the next morning he wakes up with many, many rows of white hair. So now he is going to look older. Again, the wits will say tongue-in-cheek that he aged overnight when he became the Nasi. The next morning he's waking up with white hair. But the Gemara understands that that was a siman hashamayim. That was an ace min hashamayim. That he aged prematurely so that he would be able to function well as a Nasi. So look at that. Here's a man who had it all. He had yichas, and he was wealthy, and he had this extraordinary leadership position with a divine stamp of approval. And yet, Ashadrasha ben Zoma. I had the shita that I was trying to push, Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos, I didn't make any headway. And Ben Zoma, who was a much lower profile figure, we don't even hear about his first name, he was Matzliach. So Yashiv says, you know, maybe that's one of the opening lessons of the Haggadah, is understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Understand that efforts are on us, but results are on our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had everything going for him, but that doesn't mean he was able to succeed. And Ben Zoma didn't have the profile. Ben Zoma didn't have the yichus. Ben Zoma didn't have the leadership position. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to succeed, and that worked. And this notion that you don't need to have all the chips stacked on your side to be matzliach. That sometimes you may seem like the yichus isn't there and the location isn't there, and one can still be matzliach. One can still be matzliach with siyata d'shmaya, and with a mix of siyata d'shmaya and an honest effort. And then this notion that hatzlacha, that Kadosh Baruch Hu can bring hatzlacha to people, whether it seems likely or unlikely, So I think that's also captured in a more famous approach to the Bnei Brak. I believe it's the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan and others. And the significance of the location in Bnei Brak lies in Gemara Sanhedrin. Gemara Sanhedrin tells us who was, I mentioned before, Gemara Sanhedrin tells us that these Tanaim were Rabbanim in different towns. Who was the Rav in Bnei Brak? Rabbi Akiva. And the remarkable thing is that the Rabbeim are coming to the Talmud. Rabbi Akiva was a student of Rabbi Lazar. He was a student of Rabbi Yeshua. And they're coming to him for Seder. So that seems backwards. Why are they all coming to Bnei Brak? So I think it's our HaShulchan and others who suggest that he may have been the Talmud in terms of many sugyas, but he was a Rabbi in optimism. I think I've joked in shul in the past, Rabbi Shechter was put out a psak earlier this year, or last week, I believe, that once upon a time there was a minig of that Bechorim would fast, but more recently there's been a minig that we make a siyum. That's really, the minig has shifted. It's not so much a minig to fast, minig to make a siyum. So I think joked in the past that Kol Yisrael has developed over the last century or so a minig that we chazer the last Gemara in Makkos on Erev Pesach morning. Definitely Makkos is by far the most popular siyum on an Erev Pesach morning. So in a sense, almost every shul, someone's going to review out loud Erev Pesach morning the closing Gemara in Makkos. And the closing Gemara in Makkos is a story of Rabbi Akiva and many of these other Tanaim. And you'll remember that Rabbi Akiva and his Chavirim, they're walking by Makom HaMikdash, and it's been plowed over, it's desolate, and they all begin to cry, and Rabbi Akiva inexplicably is smiling. And they look at him as though he's lost his mind. Why are you smiling? You see Churban. And he looks at them and he says, well, why are you so sad? He says, why are you so sad? It's terrible, horrific. And he says, yes, that is Churban, absolutely. I'm not denying reality at all. But when I see Churban, it allows me to also see Geula. He says, you know, we had read this Nevuah of the Shur Lim Hilchubo, and we believed it. Well, we tried to imagine our mind's eye. But now that I actually see it, I actually see the foxes walking through Makom HaMikdash, it makes, when I see that negative Nevuah actualized before my eyes, it makes it easier for me to imagine the positive Nevuos actualized as well. Like an amazing type of leverage, amazing type of optimistic leverage. And when I see the negativity, he saw it, he didn't deny, there was no denial here. But it enabled, he saw how that could positively vault him forward. A remarkable thing. As an aside, the Nevuah that Rabbi Akiva speaks about, that he can only imagine that positive Nevuah is one that we are Zoche, what Rabbi Akiva would have given to be able to see B'mo'inayim, the positive Nevuah of Zechariah. The Od Yeshua was the Canaan's B'chor was Yerushalayim. I know many of you, like me, have seen, if you don't just head down the Rehov Tveris Yisrael with all the other tourists in the Jewish quarter, but you make the correct right turn, left turn, right turn, left turn, you end up in Rechava, a stone playground for the residents of the old city, where there's the space for the kids to play, and there's a bench there where the older people sit. And inscribed right there is that Nevuah of Zechariah. And you can stand there and see the Nevuah with your own two eyes. You see the kids playing. And you see the Zekanim and Zekanos sitting Berachot Yerushalayim. So it's an incredible thing. Rabbi Akiva didn't see it, and yet he did see it. He did not have the schus that we have to actually see the Nevuah of Zechariah before his eyes. And yet, seeing a negative Nevuah happen, seeing the Shulam in Mikdash, allowed him to already imagine more vividly what we get to see. And that's an extraordinary show of optimism. And it's the same, it's that optimism that we talk about in Erev Pesach is also the optimism of Rabbi Akiva that we think about after Pesach. Because we know that one of the reasons for the Avelus of Sfira is the passing, the perishing of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. There's a lot to say about that story, but let's jump right now to the very last line. Rabbi Akiva has built himself from someone who was not only not learned, but but violently anti-learning, into someone who became a pro-learning Jew, someone became a Yodea Sefer, someone became a Talmud Chacham, someone became one of the greatest Talmud Chacham of all time, such that when the Gemara describes Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to show Moshe Rabbeinu what learning will look like in the future, which of more than 3,000 years of yeshivos, the yeshiva he sees is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is a man who was the largest yeshiva of all time, 24,000 Talmidim. And then they're all gone. And he could have retired. And I've shared this with somebody in the past. He was an older man. He had done it all. And he could have retired. And instead, he goes ahead and starts another yeshiva. How many Talmidim does he have? 5 Talmidim. And you imagine the cynics of the generation blogging about this also-ran, Rabbi Akiva. And he doesn't realize it's time to hang it up. You know, he's trying again. This is just not working. You had 24,000 Talmidim the first time. Now you have 5? Give me a break. And yet, we know nothing about the Torah of the 24,000 Talmidim. We know none of their names. And those 5 Talmidim, most of Mishnayos are Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon. The extraordinary optimism of Rabbi Akiva. And that's the optimism of after Pesach. That's the optimism of Erev Pesach. And that's the optimism of Leil HaSeder. We open up the Seder by saying they all came to Bnei Brak because, you know, there definitely are incredible challenges for many of us this Leil HaSeder. But imagine in the days of Rabbi Akiva. Imagine they still remember they used to have a real Seder with the Karban Pesach. And now it felt like nothing. Felt like this is a fake Seder, no Korban Pesach. And maybe this story happened after the Bar Kokhba revolt. Rabbi Akiva had thought the Mashiach was coming. It wasn't happening for a long time. The sort of national dejection, it's hard to imagine the depth of it. And you can have a Seder then too. And they came to Rabbi Akiva to teach him, to show them. He may have been their Talmud, but he was their Rebbe in optimism. And they came to him to see how you could mamish all night long. Misaprim, 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 until the Talmidim came and said, "It gives my kriyas shel shachris." Till the Talmidim said, "We're starting to see, morning is breaking, things are beginning to become clear. The Seder is working." There's so much to say. But let's turn to the climax of Magid. After Mitchila Ovdei Zarah Hoseinu, after the second half of the answer to the story of Manashtanam, we move on to tell the story through focusing on the 4 psukim of Parshat Kisavo, Rami El Vidavi, and so on and so forth, Vayanunu, Vayotzienu. And we use the elaboration of those psukim, holach v'dorish kol ha'parsha, we elaborate those psukim, and that becomes a vehicle for the primary telling of the story that takes us through the Eser Makas. And we wrap up that section with the piyut of Dayenu. And then we say, not only do we want to tell the story through questions and answers, we want to tell the story through the medrash, through intertwining Torah Shebichtav Sarv and Torah Shebichtav Peh, we also want to tell the story by intertwining action and ideas, or objects, something visual, something tangible with ideas. We're not just going to tell the story, but let's relate the story to the mitzvah halal, to the objects, the mitzvah objects on the table. Pesach, matzah, maror. And by the time we're done with that, we say, okay, now we're ready. Now that we've told the story, we're ready to respond with a bit of challah. So what is that? We all know, right? In many houses, people get, you know, whoever may have gone to the kitchen or may have gone to the basement, chever time to come back, Rabbi Gamliel, everyone has to be here for Rabbi Gamliel. Right? So significant. The Yosidei Chavosa. A quick question. Quick question that maybe we've had the chance to think about in the past as well. You ought to, like, the ultimate ask, this is it. Like, this is the key telling of the story. You gotta hear these ideas. What's so exciting? Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu jumped over the Bati Avoseinu. Okay, that sounds significant. Matzah, Maror. So Maror has to do with the Merirus, to appreciate what Shiva Mitzrayim was like, to appreciate thereby, by contrast, you know, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of and how much things changed. Okay. Matzah? You should know we're eating matzah because we didn't have time for the dough to rise. Really? That's like one of the central themes? What does this mean? This is it, Rabbi Osei. This is a summation, the core ideas that have emerged from the story we've been telling. That's one of the three main ideas, is that they were in a rush to get out of Mitzrayim. Well, what's the significance of that? We expect at this point to be hearing Ikari Emuna. What are basic principles? So how is this a core principle? How is this a core principle? How is this a core principle? So a few things. We'll end with three ideas on the matzah. Number one, what's interesting about the matzah is that if you look in the Chumash, in Parshas Re'eh, the matzah is described as lechem oni, which the Gemara interprets in more than one way. On the one hand, is lechem oni is milashen ve'anisa ve'amarta. It's bread of speech. The matzah is on the table. The matzah absorbs the conversation of Magid before you eat it. Okay? Bread of conversation. Not just food for thought, but food of thought. But then the other aspect of matzah is that lechem oni, it's a bread of poverty, bread of affliction. This is what our great-great-grandparents ate while they were avadim in Mitzrayim. So the Nesivos and others point out that matzah really has like a dual theme. Matzah is zecher l'shibud, lechem oni. Rebbe Gamliel is telling us it's also zecher l'geula. So that's interesting. Sometimes the same item could have sort of different aspects to it. And now let's dig deeper. What is the Zecher Legula? Why is it so incredibly significant? So on one level, you know, the significance, if we had to express in more general terms, what's the significance of Karban Pesach? Al Shum Shapasach Abate Avoseim B'Mitzrayim. So why is that such a major detail? Why is that such a significant point? So L'chora, I think B'Pshuto, that the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu was Poseach means that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu unfurled Makas Bechoros, HaKadosh Baruch Hu implemented Makas Bechoros, it was with specificity. This family deserves Makas Bechoros, that family does not. This family is a Mitzri family, and that family is a Jewish family. And there was a specificity, and there was a precision in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu was handling us. That's the significance, I think, of the Karban Pesach. Of the message we're bringing out is Hashkacha Pratis. Hashkacha Pratis means specific providence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved with you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved with me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved with him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved with her. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows each of us and cares uniquely about each of us and is involved uniquely with each and every one of us. It's personalized. That's Hashkacha Pratis. And that's the message of the Karban Pesach. That Kadosh Baruch Hu was Poseach. Each one got what he deserved. And if Karban Pesach is precision, specificity in terms of person and in terms of location, this bias versus that bias, matzah maybe is the same idea in terms of time. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to be nigal at a certain time, and it happened exactly when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to happen. So much so that you have food in the, you have bread rising. So we don't even have time to finish the food prep. You got to go now. And the Gemara points out is a sort of a curious passage in Sefer Shmuel. And Shaul is on his way to find the Navi Shmuel. He thinks he's just looking for Shmuel because he lost his donkey. So he was told to go find Shmuel HaNavi. We'll help him find the donkeys. But meanwhile, Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan is that he's going to find Shmuel so that Shmuel can anoint him as king. And Shmuel already got Nevuah. The Shaul is on the way. He's going to arrive. And when he arrives, he's going to ask you some other question, but you're going to anoint him as Melech Yisrael. And he really comes to the to Shmuel's city, but he's not sure where Shmuel lives. And the Psukim describe that he meets this group of young women, and he asks them, "Where can I find Shmuel HaNavi?" And they, it sounds like they begin to babble. They say, "Well, if you go there, he's over there because that's where he is. If you go there, you'll find him because that's where he is because he's over there." The Gemara says, "What was it all about? What was it all about?" So it sounds like there was Shaul was tall, dark, and handsome. He was a good-looking guy, and he walks over to this group of young women. He's just looking for directions to find Shmuel HaNavi, but they wanted a couple extra moments to bask in his good looks, so they kept talking. And the Gemara says that was their kavanah. They were talking, because they wanted to spend a couple extra seconds with Shaul, with this good-looking fellow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kavanah was that Shaul was going to, there was a specific time HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind, a moment in time when Shaul's melucha would start. And the Gemara says, Gemara Yuma says, Ein malchus nagas b'chavrta afil kumlonima. The malchus is going to begin exactly when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to begin. Not a moment sooner, not a moment later. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it, the reason why those girls were talking to him, they had their own reason, personal reasons, for speaking at great length to Shaul. To Shaul. But the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, and the reason why that their verbosity is so significant that it gets recorded in the Tanakh, is because that was a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan to ensure that Shaul would arrive at Shmuel at exactly the right moment. That Shaul would arrive at Shmuel and be anointed as king at the exact moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to happen, not a moment sooner. So what needed to happen is that he would ask for directions. Ribbono Shel Olam worked it out. The people who asked for directions would be those people who would take a couple extra seconds in giving him directions so that the timing would be just right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's handling of people is precise, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's handling of events is with precision. That's the significance of Pesach and of Matzah. Ki b'chipazon, the Geula happened exactly when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to happen. So much so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans were so precise, there wasn't even time but I got to finish my bread. I'm sorry. Because the Geula is going to happen exactly when and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, exactly when and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to happen. But I promised three ideas about the matzah, so I'll give you a third. Because we spoke so far about the significance of matzah and the matzah zoo, the al shum shlo hispik, is that it highlights that although matzah was an incredible negative, it also was a symbol of incredible positive. Number two, the notion of chipazon as capturing in this aspect of hashkacha pratis, specificity and precision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans, following up on that theme as it's expressed in the Karban Pesach, the personalization, the uniqueness of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu handles each person. And finally, I'll share with you, we'll close, with a comment of Rav Yaakov Melisa, the author of the Nesivos, in his Agadah, the Matzah Nisim. He has a different approach to, he speaks about the dual aspect of Matzah. He also speaks about the Chipazon. And what he says is, I think, a very sweet way to end. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to reveal himself to Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was yearning to reveal himself to Klal Yisrael. It's not going to happen in Mitzrayim. It couldn't happen in Mitzrayim. Even Moshe's tefillah sometimes couldn't happen in the capital city of Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was yearning to get us out to a spiritually clean desert and bring us to Har Sinai and propose to Klal Yisrael. And it's so often described as the marriage, Har Sinai, the marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was yearning, so he needed to get us out as quickly as possible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked us up for the date. And the Jews were dilly-dallying. Well, we still have food in the oven. We still have a dough that's right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, right now, keep a chipazon, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't just checking off the box. He wasn't just taking us out of Mitzrayim because, yeah, that's on today's to-do list. This is what I got to get done. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it, so to speak. There was as we would describe in human terms, a yearning to make this happen. So he was in a rush because he wanted to get us out of Mitzrayim so he could have a conversation with us. The same chiba that we discussed last week, that with which Rashi opens Sefer Vayikra, the love and tenderness, the preciousness that Kadosh Baruch Hu feels towards Klal Yisrael, that's expressed in his reaching out to us with Torah and mitzvahs, that are ways for us to shape ourselves. Kadosh Baruch Hu was yearning to have a connection with Klal Yisrael, so he rushed us out of Mitzrayim so he could get to that those conversations as quickly as possible. And so matzah is also an expression of Kadosh Baruch Hu's love for Klal Yisrael. He was in such a rush, he was in such a hurry to have the chance to sit down with us, to have the chance to spend time with us, to have the chance to forge a relationship with us. And the matzah is a reminder that we should open our eyes and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's care for us, see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unique, specific involvement in each and every one of us, and see the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us and the yearning he has to build and deepen the relationship with us. And sometimes, as we said, to close where we opened, sometimes we don't necessarily feel it in the moment. And sometimes we experience, our perception is Hester Panim. Sometimes there'll be times in our lives, there'll be times in world history, and there'll be times in individuals, ups and downs. There'll be times when it may seem at first that Kadosh Baruch Hu's face is hidden. And one of the goals of the Haggadah is for us to recognize Shlomo Melech's interpretation of that he's not mashgiach. Hester Panim means that he's not mashgiach menachalonos. He's not obviously watching us, but he certainly is inobviously meitzitz menacharakim. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is involved. He's involved each and every one of us. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is excited, as it were, to have a relationship with us. And so the follow-up to that is to seek to find our own Nasa v'nishma. It's been special spending time with you. May rachok. We're meitzitz from the windows here, from the window panes of our Zoom screens. Emirat Hashem, we should be zoche that in this Seder in a unique time will hopefully give us unique access to growing together as individuals, to growing as families. And this unique Pesach will hopefully have unique positive impact as well. And the ideals will be driven in deeply to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every situation. We should be zochim Mirtz Hashem, Bekarav Mamish, to be sitting together in ways that we've taken for granted, to be shoulder to shoulder, to sit around the same table, and of course to sit together in the ultimate sense of together, to be mischaber in chaburus, Yom Yitzchak Hashem, very soon, chaburus to eat karm Pesach, in the ear shechubur layachnu Yerushalayim. Thank you so much, Rabbi Osei. We should be zoch to great he'ora over the course of this Pesach.